There has been so much has been discussed in the news recently of the Supreme Court justice and his appointment, and listening to the various, well, almost trials that were going on of happening there. I started putting together notes and a lesson and things like that, because there were several issues that came up that I think is important for us to consider. Because one of the things that we're dealing with, or what has been brought to the forefront, is how do you tell when somebody's telling the truth? How do you know when somebody's telling a lie? Truth is critical. In Proverbs chapter 29, which is, we haven't quite got there in our studies on Wednesday night, but there's a passage in verse 14, Proverbs 29, verse 14. It says, "If a king judges the poor with truth, his throne will be established forever." Truth brings stability to a nation. It's dealing with facts. Is dealing with what is reality. And when people know that truth matters, then a country becomes more stable. Jesus also told us that truth makes us free. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later, but in John chapter 8 and in verse 32. Actually, we'll start with verse 31. It says, "So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, 'If you continue in my word, then you are truly my disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.'" Jesus is the truth. In fact, a little later in John 14 and verse 6, Jesus says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." This is how important truth is. It is about our salvation. It's about our reaching God. Because as Jesus' words, which he had mentioned earlier in John 8, is Jesus' words which then judges us. Going back to John 12. And verse 48, "He who rejects me and does not receive my sayings has one who judges him. The word I spoke is what will judge him in that last day." Jesus said his words were truth. We're going to be judged by truth. But as I pointed out, what really led the discussion is what's been happening in the last few weeks. And what distinguishes truth from lies? Pilate asked a very interesting question in John 18. Jesus mentioned that he was there to teach the truth. But in John 18 and verse 37, Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Now, Pilate, we know from, as you continue reading that verse, wasn't interested in an answer. He walked out. Which basically tells us Pilate's thought that there is no answer to that. You can't know what truth is. Perhaps he thought truth was undefinable. But we're going to consider that question this evening. How do we recognize what truth is? In fact, we just, it was an interesting thing. This had a short email exchange with Cheryl, because there's been a note floating around on Facebook. And I pointed out, well, that's fake. Well, how do you know it's fake? There's some interesting ways, and there's actually some things that you can look for that tell you when certain things, when you've got a note that comes around, or even on little things, how do you know that's fake? Well, one thing is, truth is always narrow. That particular note, one of the things that first caught my eye, it was addressed to me, but it never said my name. It was general. It was written in a general, vague, it could cover anybody. And that's one of the alerts that you look for in such a thing. But what we know is truth is narrow. For a very practical reason. Take a look at, let's talk about some other things. Like, for instance, in mathematics, there's a whole lot of wrong answers, and I got a lot of them when I was taking math. I can't tell you how many times I proved that 0 equals 1 when I was taking logic. No, it doesn't equal 1, but I proved it. I proved it any number of ways that it had to be true. Math is very narrow. 2 plus 2 equals 4. There isn't a range of acceptable answers. The answer is 4. It's narrow. Historical truth is narrow too. Like how many people held the office of president? There's a fixed number. Now, every 4 years we add another number to it, but there's only a certain number of people that held it. Washington was the first president. I mean, you got each one, that's a fact. There's not a range of possible right answers to those historical truths. Scientific truths are narrow because airplanes are able to fly because of known truths about airflow and lift power. Okay. There's not a range, really, of right answers. It's fairly narrow. And the same thing applies to spiritual truth. Take a look at Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. And in verse 13. Enter through the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who enter by it. Spiritual truth is narrow. There's not a lot of options. There are, I don't know how many possible ways to get to hell. I'm sure it's about close to infinite. There's lots of ways you can choose and end up there. But to get to heaven, suddenly the options narrow down drastically. That's why, for instance, Paul in Ephesians chapter 5 or 4, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 5, says there's one Lord, one faith, one baptism. Faith here is the system of belief. There is one system of belief. Not a dozen, not 3,000, if you count the number of denominations out there or so. There is one. And as we had talked about from Proverbs 4 this morning, we talked about the right path and staying off the wrong path. But later on in that same chapter, in Proverbs chapter 4, Proverbs 4 and verse 25. It says, let your eyes look directly ahead and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your feet from evil. The path is narrow. The way is straight. You can't deviate because truth is narrow in that same way. Now, when you deal with people who want to reject the truth, what you'll find is that they don't like the restrictions. That's one of the common things. Oh, you're just being legalistic. Is one of the arguments. Well, as I pointed out, you know, when I deal with my doctor, I want him to be legalistic. I really don't want to be experimented on. I want him to know what's going on and fix it. I want the same way with my spiritual help. I want to know how to get to heaven, not experiments in other ways that somebody thinks might get you to heaven. But see, false teachers will malign the narrowness of truth. In 2 Peter chapter 2, 2 Peter chapter 2, and in starting with verse 1, it says, "But false prophets also arose among the people, just as there also will be false teachers among you, who will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing swift destruction upon themselves. Many will follow their sensuality, and because of them, the way of truth will be maligned." Why is that? Well, see, the way of truth is narrow. It doesn't include what these false teachers want to have included. Well, then, of course, they're going to have to malign saying, you can't say only stricter. You got to allow us to have these extra alternatives. Later on in that same chapter in verse 15, it says, "Forsaking the right way, they have gone astray, having followed the way of Balaam and the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness." Forsaking the right way. There is a right way. But they're not interested in staying on that path. If truth can be broadened, then they can claim that, well, their way is also truth. And so they make fun and make mockery of the narrowness of truth. But truth is also not about who believes it. See, that's one of the flaws in that trial that was going on the last couple of weeks. They made it more of an issue, who believed who. That has nothing to do with truth, if you stop to think about it. You know, the guy who denies that gravity applies to him still gets hurt when he jumps off the roof. It doesn't matter whether he believes the fact or not. The ground still hurts. Facts are things that don't change, regardless of who believes them or denies them. In fact, that's an interesting thing that the Pharisees did in dealing with Jesus. They did not like Jesus. They wanted to deny him. And in John chapter 7, notice their argument. In John 7 verse 45, "The officers then came to the chief priests and the Pharisees, and they said to them, 'Why did you not bring him?' The officers answered, 'Never has a man spoken the way this man speaks.' The Pharisees then answered them, 'You have not been led astray, have you? No one of the rulers or the Pharisees have believed in him, has he? But this crowd which does not know the law is accursed.'" Notice their argument. We don't accept Jesus. We're the rulers. We're the people who are supposed to know what everything is going on. Therefore, you should too. You should deny him too. It's not about what the facts are. They were trying to make it an issue who accepts it or not, as if somehow that changed the truth. Really, the problem is that when we start making it about people, pride gets in the way. Pride gets in the way of actually seeing the truth. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and in verse 26, Paul points out, he said, "For consider your calling, brethren. that there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. Now, why is it that the smartest people, the strongest people, the mightiest people, they don't seem to get really attracted to the truth? And again, the answer comes down to pride. Because it has to mean that I'm not right. I need to change something in my life. And for a lot of people, they can't allow that pride to get in their way. The pride doesn't allow that to get in their way. But even though pride stops them from seeing the truth, it doesn't change the truth. In 1 Corinthians again, in chapter 2, starting with verse 7, Paul says, "But we speak God's wisdom in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God predestined before the ages to our glory, the wisdom which none of the rulers of this age has understood. For if they had understood it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory." These people did not understand, but did that make it less true? The answer is no. You can't make truth not exist just because you don't want to believe it. Another thing about truth is that you can't exchange it for something else. You can't use something else in its place. There's a consistency to truth. Again, if we go back to Proverbs 14 this time, Proverbs 14 and verse 5, "A trustworthy witness will not lie, but a false witness utters lies." This again, this is one of the ones that I was thinking about most during that time that going on the last few weeks. How do you know who's telling the truth? Well, one of the things that it says is that people are basically consistent. If they're telling things that are proved to be false, you can't trust them on the critical matters, because they already show a history, a consistency of telling lies. It undermines their evidence. But when you see somebody who is truthful, even on other matters that are unrelated to that, you find a consistency. Yeah, but what they say is always verifiable. It's always turns out to be true. See, that's one of the ways Jesus proved that he was the truth. It annoyed the Pharisees to death, but he was always right. He was consistently right. And that means that, well, if he's consistent in everything else, then he probably was consistent with who he was and who he said he was. But see, if you try taking something that isn't true and put it in its place, well, if it isn't true, then it has to be error. And error can never replace truth. But you know, that's what the Gentiles did. The Pharisees had a problem with one part of it. The Gentiles also had a problem. Take a look at Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 and verse 24. We use this verse this morning, but again, "Therefore God gave them over to the lust of their hearts, the impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among themselves, for they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." They thought they could replace God with an idol. You know, that still goes on today. There are so many people, oh, it doesn't matter what God is, still you got your God and I have my God. You know, the Muslims have Allah, we have God. You know, it doesn't matter. They're all the same. No, it's not. Allah cannot be replaced with God. Or God can't be replaced with Allah. Because one is true and the other is a falsehood. It's not that you're just using a different name. They're different descriptions. They're different people. One exists and one doesn't. One is true and the other is not. You cannot replace truth with a lie. The reason why the Gentile society fell in corruption was because they tried to replace God with an idol. And it ended up decaying their whole society. Another thing about truth is it can't be changed. Not only can you not substitute something else for it, you can't change it. You can't alter it and it remain true. John tells us in 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. And in verse 21, it says, I have not written to you because you do not know the truth, but because you do know it, and because no lie is of the truth. You can't alter truth. You can't say this, you know, this little bit of a lie suddenly is now truth. Changing the truth leaves you condemned. Changing the gospel is a sure way to end up in hell. Paul said in Galatians chapter 1, Galatians chapter 1, verse 6, I'm amazed that you're so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another. Only there are some who are disturbing you and wanting to distort the gospel of Christ. See, they're trying to change it, not totally substitute, just tweak it. But even if we or an angel of heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is to be accursed. As we have said before, so I say again now, if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you received, he is to be accursed. You cannot alter the truth. And because it wouldn't remain the truth. But again, the question is, how do you tell? Here's another aspect of it. Truth is always verifiable. Because truth doesn't change, it can be confirmed. You know, the Bible uses this requirement, there has to be two or three witnesses. Why? Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 19. Deuteronomy 19 and verse 15. A single witness shall not rise up against a man on account of any iniquity or any sin which he has committed. On the evidence of two or three witnesses, a matter shall be confirmed. It took multiple witnesses. Why? Because any single person would lie. We got to understand that people lie. Amazing fact. And so therefore, he required multiple witnesses to confirm that something was true. In fact, Jesus even said about himself, he said that if all you had was just my word for it, it wasn't enough. In John chapter 5, John chapter 5, and in verse 31, If I alone testify about myself, my testimony is not true. Without confirmation, even though what he's saying is truth, it requires that confirmation so that we know that it's truth. So if you take like what happened last week, you have one person making an accusation. Okay, whether you believe her or not, it doesn't matter. That's not truth. Because it's not verified. In fact, when they tried to verify it, that's one of the problems they came up with. They couldn't find multiple witnesses. In fact, when they did find people, they denied it. Truth is verifiable. It requires multiple witnesses. Another aspect of it also is because truth doesn't change, it endures. It stays the same because it can't be anything else. Going again to Proverbs 19 this time, and in verse 9. Proverbs 19, verse 9, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will perish. It doesn't last. Lies never do. Part of the problem is that when people tell lies, they forget what lies they told. And you know how many ways you can tell a lie? Probably as many ways you can end up in hell. There are infinite number of ways you can tell a lie. Truth is narrow. So over time, the liar gets caught because they forget their lies. They forget what they had actually said. And so testimonies end up changing because they can't remember what they said. Lies, people tell lies because they look at it and they think that gives a quick victory. But take a look at Proverbs 20 and verse 17. Bread obtained by falsehood is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth will be filled with gravel. It starts out looking like, hey, I get something from this, but it doesn't last. And it's not a long-lasting victory. Now, there's another aspect of lie, though, that we also need to take into account, or actually about truth. Truth hurts. Truth can hurt you. Truth doesn't respect a person or his feelings. Now, truth doesn't treat, let's take the truth of the law of gravity again. It doesn't treat the king differently than me. Or the president, or the mayor. The law of gravity is truth. It doesn't care who's involved in it. It's going to work the same way. And truth, again, won't be concerned about a person or a person's feelings. This is the way things are. But while truth isn't concerned about a particular person's feelings, at the same time, a truthful person has concerns. He's concerned about saving people's lives. Take a look at Proverbs 14 in verse 25. A truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous. See, a liar usually is all he's interested in is himself. A truthful person wants the truth told, whether it hurts me or not, or whether it hurts you. Because on the long run, I want most people saved. You know, I could go to a doctor and he could tell me, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to worry about anything. And that'd probably be what I want to hear. But, you know, I go to doctors because I want to be told what's wrong. You know what? If somebody ever tells me, hey, you know, you're going to have cancer or something like that, it's not fun. I can say that from my experience. I got a scar on my face for that. But I'd rather be told the truth, even though it hurts. Because I'd rather deal with the truth. Because in the long run, that saves lives. In Proverbs chapter 1, a long time ago we discussed this passage. In Proverbs chapter 1, wisdom is trying to get noticed and get her message out. It says, wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts up her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates of the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof, because behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I'll make my words known to you. Because I called, you refused. I stretched out my hand, and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. I don't know about you, but most people don't like being called fools and naive and scoffers. But it was the truth. She was telling them what they needed to hear, but it wasn't what they wanted to hear. But you know, it didn't change the truth of her warning. Just because they didn't want to hear it, that didn't change anything. If you start with verse 26, it says, I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity like a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come upon you. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they'll eat the fruit of their own way and be sated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy him. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. We have to listen to reproof. We have to be listening to when God tells us we're wrong. And sometimes truth hurts. But you know, there are people who will shout that it's offensive. You can't offend somebody else. There are people that shout they're offended when they're told the truth. You know, such as the fact that homosexuality is a sin. In Romans chapter 1, verse 26 or 27, I won't take time to read it. But it tells us that homosexuality is a sin. Does the fact that they say they're offended change that fact? No. God still says it's a sin. But people say, well, because I'm offended, therefore it ought to change. No. It remains the truth. There are also people in denominations that get really upset when, you know, somebody points out their practice is wrong. It doesn't match what the Bible says. The Jews got upset with Jesus for that. He pointed out that their religious practices were wrong. They have strayed away from what the Bible taught. But you know what? That doesn't change anything. They could be offended all day long, but it doesn't change the truth. Just about every religious truth is offensive to somebody somewhere. I know people who are really upset that the New Testament only authorized vocal music in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 19. Yes, the Old Testament has instrumental music, but the New Testament only has vocal music. And some people, when you point out to them, they get really upset about it. But it doesn't change the facts. I know other people that get upset because women are prohibited from publicly speaking. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verses 33 to 40. They'll say, well, women ought to be equal. Well, women are equal in many aspects. But in the church, in the assembly, there's a rule that was put down for a reason. I might not know all the reason, but God, this is the rule God said. And it doesn't change the fact. Still, others find it offensive that when you say, well, baptism saves. I've had lots of people argue that one. But it's exactly what 1 Peter 3, verse 21 says. It's what Jesus said in Mark chapter 16, verse 16. You can claim that you're offended by that narrowness of it, but that's what the Bible teaches. And yes, maybe you're offended. Maybe it hurts. Maybe it hurts because, hey, my aunt or my grandmother, they weren't baptized. But does that change the truth? I knew one person who rejected the whole thing when she heard about baptism because she said, well, then that means I wasn't saved before. Well, yeah. But she didn't want to hear anymore. She didn't want to think about herself as being lost. But it doesn't change the truth. But you know what liars do? Liars will tell people what they want to hear. In Psalms chapter 12, Psalms chapter 12 and verse 2, they speak falsehood to one another with flattering lips and with a double heart they speak. They'll tell you exactly what you want to hear. And it's not offensive. It doesn't hurt me. But does that make it the truth? Just because I like it doesn't make it true. We mentioned that in John 8, in verse 32, Jesus said the truth makes you free. It's an interesting thought when you consider it. Think about the consequences in our own society when truth becomes subjective, which it has over the years, and is relative to the way a person feels. I can always tell when somebody's been gone through the modern education system. They'll respond to some thing. Well, I feel this way. Okay, fine. But feelings are not truth. I can feel wrong about something. Just as easily feel right about it. If we feel something, then society basically tells us that's our own personal truth. However, you know what? The only feelings I can trust are my own. I have no clues what your feelings are. But I know what my feelings are. So when you tell me that you feel this way, well, I feel something different. So therefore, your truth is different from my truth. In other words, what comes out in the long run is I can't trust anybody else but me. Think what that does to society. When you have a whole society of people who only trust their own feelings and nobody else. Because without objective truth, then I can't have justice. Because justice requires to know what really happened. And without objective truth, then we can't know, and then there's no justice. There's no reasoning, there's no understanding. In Psalms chapter 119, Psalms 119, and in verse 104, from your precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. It is from God's truth that I understand the way life works. Teaches me how to reason. Without justice, then society collapses. Going to Psalm 7. Psalm 7 in verse 14. Behold, he travails with wickedness, and he conceives mischief and brings forth falsehood. With that falsehood comes wickedness, problems, evil. Society collapses into chaos because everybody does what's right in their own eyes, just like in the period of the judges. I forgot to put that verse down, but it's the last verse in Judges. And without truth, there's no morality. In Proverbs chapter 13, in verse 5, it says, a righteous man hates falsehood, but a wicked man acts disgustingly and shamefully. And what the result is that people deny that there are any standards. But at the same time, they insist that people conform to standards that are based on personal preference. You have people arguing two opposite extremes at the same time. It isn't that standards don't exist or that there are no reasons for standards. After all, truth doesn't change based on who is demanding what they believe to be true. But what happens is that people react harshly in these circumstances. Think about what had happened when they abandoned ideas of actually saying we're going to have evidence, this established truth, and the evidence wasn't there. Rather, they wanted you to believe based on personal perceptions. How did the people react? People reacted harshly against perceived offenders of their beliefs because their beliefs have no foundation other than their feelings. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 28, or 25, sorry. Proverbs 25 and in verse 18. Like a club and a sword and a sharp arrow is a man who bears false witness against his neighbor. It stirs up strife. It causes anger. It causes all sorts of frustration. And it's not just on one side. You can see it on both sides. A person who may be falsely accused, of course he's going to react with anger. Because how can he prove if you don't accept truth? And it's all about feelings. And you abandon any claims of evidence. And when the other person, their evidence, which is based all on feelings, is rejected, they respond in anger. And thus, people decide who to believe or not believe in advance of hearing any evidence. That was one of the things I found amazing. Maybe not totally amazing, but think about it in the last couple of weeks. Prior to anybody actually sitting down and saying, hey, let's look at this stuff, People had already made up their mind to one side or the other. And it's all based on feeling. But my feelings are different from your feelings, so there are fights, arguments about whose feelings are more important. In Psalms 27, and in verse 12, do not deliver me over to the desires of my adversaries, for false witnesses arose against me, and such breathe out violence. It's a result of a society that thrives on lies. And somehow the one who wins the brawl gets to define what truth is for the moment. What's really odd is a little statement that's found in Proverbs chapter 7. Liars tend to accept what is most destructive. Not what's true, but the thing that causes the most destruction is what people tend. And if you haven't noticed it, have you never noticed that if people always go after the juicy bad news and they believe it more quickly than any good news? Proverbs chapter 7. Or 17, sorry. Proverbs 17 and in verse 4. An evildoer listens to wicked lips. A liar pays attention to the destructive tongue. And since it's all about me and no care about other people or what their best interests are, liars tend to be very unkind. In Proverbs 19 and in verse 22, what is desirable in a man is his kindness, and it's better to be a poor man than a liar. The implication there is liars are not kind. But that's because it's selfish, based on personal feelings. But we need to understand, truth is the foundation of Christianity. Feelings are set aside. Evidence is examined. We have many denominations that want to make it all about the feelings. But Christianity is based on truth. The Gospels are historical accounts about what happened. Take a look at what Luke said in Luke chapter 1. I'm starting with verse 1. Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, it seemed fitting for me as well, having investigated everything carefully from the beginning, to write it out for you in a consecutive order, most excellent Theophilus, that so that you may know the exact truth about the things which you have been taught. That's the foundation of the Gospels. A record of the exact truth. That's why Paul's talked about in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, that is the truth of the resurrection, witnessed by multiple witnesses, that he lists out, established by evidence, that becomes the foundation of everything that we believe. It was the use of multiple witnesses that Jesus talked about when he said, my word alone is not good enough. But he then proceeded to list out multiple witnesses to the fact that he was the Son of God in John chapter 5. And when we have truth, that brings stability, that brings peace. But when we don't have truth, we have chaos. And society crumbles. We have to be a people that speak the truth. In Ephesians chapter 4, Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 15, it says, but speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects unto him who is the head, even Christ. It needs to be spoken in love. It hurts enough on its own. We don't need to add any more additional hurt to it. But the reason we need to speak that truth, even though it hurts, is because the love for other people's souls includes telling them things that they don't necessarily want to hear. Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, and in verse 1, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and by his appearing and his kingdom, preach the word, be ready in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience and instruction. It takes telling people they're wrong at times. But that's so that they can become right. Yes, it hurts. But in the long run, it saves. Is when people leave a wrong uncorrected that they really don't care about the person. They hate that person, actually. Take a look at what Proverbs says in verse 13, verse 24. Proverbs 13, verse 24 says, he who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. It's because I love other people and I want them to get to heaven. Yes, sometimes I have to tell them they're wrong. So that they can correct it, so they can get there. That's what God does for us. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 5, he tells us that he chastens us. So let's learn from the truth. Even when it hurts for the moment, or when it seems too restrictive, let's understand that God's doing it for our benefit. It must be people like Agur, who in Proverbs 30 and verse 8. Proverbs 30 verse 8 says, keep discretion and lies far from me. There is the type of life that I need to live. A life of truth. Because it's better for me in the long run, and it is a path that leads to heaven. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf, again, we leave that opportunity this evening. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that's selected.